All music on this podcast is from Carpe Diem by The Science and Queen Jet Matus.
I'm a Yamanatara, and my pronouns are she, hers.
I'm Irina Zara, and my pronouns are they and them.
Welcome to the Connecting the Branches podcast. We acknowledge that this podcast is being recorded on occupied land historically belonging to the Tongva and Tatavian peoples in the LA Basin.
This podcast will be heavily informed by a socially progressive lens that incorporates racial justice, intersectional feminisms, gender liberation, disability justice, and a variety of other topics.
We also wish to specify that our thoughts in this podcast are spiritually informed by Gnosticism, various esoteric practices, ethnic and cultural Jewish identity, as well as various witchcraft traditions and other multi-denominational practices. Our lived knowledge of Jewish dogmatic practices and especially schools of thought informed by Hasidic interpretation may be limited. So, welcome to episode 2.
And parental advisory, we say fuck.
Ah, yes, let's do that early this time, shall we?
I made a little jingle.
I love it. Let's keep that.
Okay. Also, we're basically kind of improv.
Welcome to the Improv Kabbalah Show.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. So I figured we could start off by looking at headlines. Just so everybody knows, my source for today's headlines happened to be What the Fuck Just Happened Today, which is a lovely newsletter if you're unfamiliar with it. Okay, so today in one sentence, Biden suggested that anyone in the country who wants a vaccine should be able to get one, quote, by the end of July, unquote. Biden clarified that his goal is to open the majority of K-8 schools by the end of his first 100 days in office. The Biden administration will invest more than $1.6 billion to expand coronavirus testing and genetic sequencing. And Biden declined to support Democratic proposals to cancel up to $50,000 per borrower in student loan debt, saying, quote, I will not make that happen, unquote.
Wait, I'm sorry, can we heckle?
We can absolutely heckle. I am all for heckling politicians, especially ones in the colonial world. Or from the colonizing world, you know what I mean. So the part that jumped out at me, let's see if I can find it. The fact that the federal administration of the United States is willing to invest more than $1.6 billion to expand coronavirus testing and genetic sequencing. So breaking this down, about $650 million will go towards testing in K-8 schools and homeless shelters. Why they lump those two together is weird. $815 million will increase manufacturing to address shortages in testing supplies. They're available, by the way, they're just not getting distributed properly. Mm-hmm. And $200 million will go to increasing genetic sequencing efforts to help track existing and new variants. The White House is calling this a $200 million down payment that would increase the number of virus samples that labs can sequence, jumping from around 7,000 to around 25,000 each week. It's also being described as a $1.6 billion package, a pilot package that will serve as a bridge until Congress passes the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill. So this jumped out at me for a couple of reasons. One, the Tree of Life, our friend, the thing we always talk about, is in some ways a map or a symbol for DNA. And so if we're talking about genetic sequencing, that sort of pings at me. I also get worried anytime the government wants to do anything with genetic sequencing, but maybe that's just me.
That's entirely fair.
They've done so well with our privacy in the past.
Yeah.
As long as they're just sequencing the virus, okay, fine. It just, you know, happens to float in our bodily fluids. So,
yeah.
So, you know, in my other podcast, my What in the World podcast, I've talked about the fact that this virus is smarter than a lot of viruses. It has a high level of intelligence. And I don't mean sentience. I just mean that it's doing its job of replicating and staying alive and mutating in order to stay alive really well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if we're looking at genetic sequencing or genetic issues and DNA in terms of the tree of life, it has a really good flow. It's you know, up and down the tree sort of thing, path of return. It seems like it is accessing all of its available tools, if you will. Like a person who can access all of the different sephira in the tree of life is going to be more effective and more efficient. Because they have access to all of the different components of self, right?
It's like using unused portions of your brain or something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so we've got this, you know, this virus, which is small and according to a lot of scientists, you know, non-sentient. Yeah, okay, it's non-sentient, but it's still intelligent. And so how do we define intelligence versus sentience? But so, yeah, we have this virus that is really accessing all of the available energy to keep itself alive.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, it's not, in its mind, it's not attacking us. It's just trying to stay alive.
I mean, it certainly had aspirations to rock stardom that it achieved.
Everybody right? talk about me all the time.
Right?
So yeah, it's interesting to look at the energetic flow DNA-wise, tree-wise, with this. And you know, if you look at there's, you know, pictures of the molecule of the or the little, you know, whatever we call it, pictures of the virus all over the place these days. And it's got all these little hooks, almost like it's ready to like climb the tree. I don't know. There's some interesting visuals with it for me.
I guess I always kind of saw them as like little suction-y cups, which is just about the same thing.
Sure. You can climb with suction cups too.
Yeah.
As usual, I'm doing things that no one can see because this is an audio podcast.
Right.
But so what can we learn from the virus? What can we learn from its intelligence? If everything in our world comes to us as a teacher, what is it we're learning from the virus?
Ooh, can I answer?
Sure.
Interdependence. So if we were going to look at like how it works, just like the act of proliferation, I don't know. I'm just kind of seeing the interdependence aspect.
Sure. I mean, it can't exist without us.
It can, but here's the thing. Like there's been a lot of talk of blah, blah, blah. How long can COVID live outside of the body and everything like that? And yes, it can. But outside a human body is absolutely not the ideal conditions for the virus to survive.
Absolutely.
So if you've got little COVIDs, you know, on the asphalt somewhere, they're probably not going to live super long, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not the ideal conditions. So sure. Again, just one of the first things that was loud to me, and also this has come partially from, I guess, reading some of Adrienne Marie Brown's stuff about emergent strategy and her talking a lot about models in nature of like interdependence, like root systems, fungi systems, how there's just like this mass spread where even organisms that are not considered intelligent, in very big quotes, because clearly they are, have ways of communicating and also finding the means to not just survival, but obviously like mass proliferation.
Thrive even, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's interesting that you bring up like the trees and the fungi and stuff, because what they're finding, you know, it's really cool with like some of the stuff like fungi, where you find it's all one plant. It covers like hundreds of miles and it's all one plant, which brings us back to the whole idea of, you know, where is that illusion of separation, you know, really, you know, are we all just cells in the body divine who happen to have some level of intelligence, you know, but are part of a larger operating system. So yeah, it's interesting also, like some of the variants that are coming up, some of the specific mutations within the variants in geographically disparate areas, some of those mutations are happening to be exactly the same. Not all of them, so that, you know, you just have to kind of play whack-a-mole if you're doing a vaccine. But yeah, the other thing I found interesting is that the one that seems to be ready to thwart the current vaccines the best is coming from the global south. The ones that fit in with the vaccine aren't from the global south. So, you know, those are places in the world where everything, people, plants, all kinds of stuff, have had to learn new strategies for survival.
Right.
You know? They don't get to do things the way the countries with money do. And so that seems to be also showing up in the variant coming out of South Africa.
Yeah.
I find this fascinating. I'm not sure what it has to do with Kabbalah, but it's fascinating. But I mean, if we look at, you know, that flow of intelligence, and if you, you know, if you define intelligence as being able to access multiple forms of information at once and synthesizing them, it absolutely has intelligence. And those multiple forms of information show up as different sephira on the tree. You know, if I can run any information that's coming into me through, like, even just through Hoden Netzach, you know, I get this much more balanced understanding of what it is that I'm perceiving, you know, what the information parts are, and I can then adapt.
Right. One of the things that is kind of popping out at me is sometimes I see a correlate of, just because I'm a very kind of physical kinesthetic person myself, you know, I often think about the correlates between each sephira and the parts of the body. And it's interesting to look at COVID-19 or whatever variants are happening, and also understand that, like, in some people, it is mainly a respiratory disease, and that's the primary thing that's compromised. But in other people, it starts to quite long-term affect other systems of the body.
Well, and we're looking at, you know, like, if you look at like the inflammatory issues that are showing up in the young kids that are dying from this, it turns out, I found out that there is an adult version of that inflammatory disease that will actually take you out. And basically what happens is all of your organs go into such levels of inflammation that you start to shut down. So yeah, I mean, it can sit in your lungs, but apparently it can also show up in your blood, like as a blood issue.
Right.
And it can show up in the kidneys,
mm-hmm.
And in the heart. So that's absolutely, you know, adaptability.
Yeah. I do want to, I want to try to pick at least a couple other subjects that are not just about COVID.
I'm all good with that. What else you got?
His balance is good.
Sure, sure. And some of us are actually sick of hearing about this.
Oh, yeah. One of the things we'd sort of emailed about back and forth was just like the distorted current cultural notion of Valentine's Day.
Ah, yes, Hallmark Day.
How there has been a little bit of an effort in the past few years to redirect the energy, at least, like make it about self-care, self-love. What is an expansive version of love beyond just like Disney bullshit, you know, and trying to re-envision it. And we talked about possibly relating it to like how this distortion would filter through like Yesod, Netzach, and Hod in terms of understanding it. I mean, I don't know if that can really be related to it, because for me, it's just like, hey, crapitalism, crapitalism, and basically,
well, I mean, like if a bullshit holiday. If Valentine's Day was actually about love, it would be all Tiferet, as opposed to like
exactly
this weird distorted version of Malchut.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we have Hod, Netzach, and Yesod in between those two spaces. And how do we start to shift the energy of, you know, a capitalistic Hallmark Day up into a celebration of love and beauty? You know, and I would say, first of all, stop buying cut flowers at overpriced, you know, market value. You know, if you take love through Yesod, which basically means taking it into the astral, taking it into dream time, taking it into the place of archetypes, you know, what are the things that actually symbolize or embody love?
Well, not only that, but like this could be a little more personal thing, but a lot of my lived experiences when working with Yesod have been about actually kind of sexual connection with other people, or it doesn't have to be sexual, it can just be intimate or romantic or some kind of connection. But Yesod does tend to like be leaning more towards some type of sexy time.
Sure.
Connection.
Well, you know, if you're looking at where it sits in the body, sure. Yeah. That's your groin.
Yeah. But you know, if you're looking at it that way, it's the reclaiming of the idea that instead of just like Hallmark bullshit or whatever, like sexuality is a creative act within itself.
Sure.
And it's important for that reason, whether it's something you are able to do with other people, whether you do it alone, or whether you just don't partake in it for whatever reason, which is totally okay.
Sure.
You know, it's about the usage of actual creative force. Like it's still kind of in that tangible creative force.
Sure.
Kind of paradigm.
Okay. So taking love into like that space of the love of creation, the love of connection. Because there absolutely is, you're right, you know, a strong force there. You know, and I would argue perhaps that even the energy that comes with anger, which is really just passion, also exists in that space. It's the oomph. You know, there's a bodhisattva of anger. The Japanese call him Fudo. And what he does is he helps people take their anger and channel that energy into doing things like breaking through spiritual blocks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all anger is a call to action, which is absolutely a creative force. And it's power. all it is power. We're just scared of feeling power in our bodies sometimes because we're not taught what to do with it. But if you take that power and use it for creativity and love and connection, you know, you have to shift it away from capitalism at that point. It can't exist within that constriction.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so then it's kind of adopting the attitude that I'm powerful, you're powerful. What can we do with that? The possibilities are endless. Are endless, really. And also, hey, what if we like disengage sexuality and whatever version of that works or doesn't work for you from capitalism, from also the I'm not trying to pick on any one religion, but there's been kind of a whole separate conversation facilitated about this on a Facebook group I'm on, but you know, a lot of when people say Judeo-Christian or Abrahamic, a lot of it is actually kind of like European and towards specifically North American colonizer Christianity.
Sure, sure.
And I think we need to start getting a little more specific about that. So, but the influence of that, where, you know, you were told sex is for reproduction, sex is for family, and you're here to pop out family to be cogs in our
Which turns human beings back into commodities, which is something that, you know, I'm hoping with this paradigm shift, we can move out of even further, because human beings are valuable in their own right, regardless of what they produce, whether it's babies or stuff or whatever.
Or what they don't produce.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely. You
know, like some people with able-bodied limitations.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that is my point. It's like, you are a valuable human being, just as valuable as every other human being, regardless of what your output may or may not be. And so by, you know, pulling things like love, which I would argue is not an emotion, even it's a force, you know, by pulling love out of that weird little capitalist constriction, we get to enjoy and embrace every individual for exactly who they are, regardless of what it is they do make, you know, their value is not contingent on how they contribute to capitalism.
Exactly.
And I realize that this is going to be a hard concept for a lot of people to wrap their heads around, because it's like talking to a fish about water.
Yeah, I mean, I started seeing a lot of, I guess you could say, media about what you just mentioned, like pretty much during last year, because a lot of people felt, you know, very limited, very restricted for a large swath of reasons, obviously, during 2020.
Sure.
And so they're like, I'm not creating, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, like, I'm not as productive at work, blah, 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 blah. And a number of people on social media were just like, stop. Let's think about this. Let's pull this apart.
Yeah.
And look at how much we have been brainwashed, you know? And that is something too, that like, really, it seems to me, I could be off base about this, but like across like class, ethnicity, racial experience, you know, gender experiences, like that feeling that we were discussing here is, you know, so common, at least in sort of this North American colonizer culture dominated paradigm.
Sure. Well, and I mean,
it's,
I think
so
that
prevalent.
The fact that people have been feeling this way, I think, is one of the things that's going to lead to this giant paradigm shift. You know, where we get to experience each other and ourselves differently.
Right. Yeah. And that when you said experience each other like that kind of flipped a switch too, because it brings to mind kind of like the culture of the 1960s in a way, like the counterculture of the 1960s, because I feel like that was the door that it was really trying to shake open as far as that goes. And obviously there were shortcomings, obviously there were things that were not immediately achieved, but you know, that's kind of what I think like the overarching motivation, you know, at least in the idealistic sense, was for a lot of it at first. You know, let's have a be in, right? Like that is, when you look at it, like really fucking anti-capitalist.
Sure. We're not doing.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, I keep pointing out to people, we are human beings. We are not human doings. And I know it's cliche, but it's true. Like,
yeah.
By doing things, you don't end up in the moment. By being and focusing on being, you end up in the moment. And that's the only moment that actually exists. And that's where the divine is. And that's where we work the tree.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that's absolutely nothing new. Like, there's a lot of indigenous wisdoms that have been talking about that forever. There's religions from the global south, you know, that have gotten at that. Yeah. So it's just, I don't know. Sorry, that was a little bit of a side tangent, but that really kind of sparked that thought in me that like that's what a lot of the counterculture folks in the 60s were at least idealistically trying for, it seems.
Well, and it's interesting because in the 60s there were so many thinkers, if you will, who mm-hmm. were putting out these ideas of what to us today seems like radical equality and radical equity that somehow got mowed over. And now we're coming back around to this and it seems all novel and radical again. And it's like, we did this already.
Yeah. It didn't go anywhere. I've had a lot of we did this already's over the past whatever, but yeah. Maybe that's just me.
No, I mean, you know, this past year seemed like a total replay of 1918, if you ask me. I'm like, we did this already.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, maybe we have an opportunity now that everything is changing. Everything came to a pause and is now changing. So maybe we can embrace some of those ideas once again. Not that a lot of people aren't already embracing them, you know. But you know, our society, the powers that be, whatever you want to call them, can you know, well, maybe we can just get the powers that be out of the way so that everybody can be their own power. But you know, it's interesting. Speaking of paradigm shift and stuff, one of the little sub stories that Matt talks about in the What the Fuck Just Happened Today. Is that the Washington Post put out a thing today that said there are economists warning that millions of jobs that have been eliminated by the coronavirus pandemic are permanent and unlikely to come back. A report coming out later this week from the McKinsey Global Institute says that 20% of business travel won't come back, and about 20% of workers could end up working from home indefinitely, which means fewer jobs at hotels, restaurants, and downtown shops. So, in order for the paradigm to shift, the economy absolutely has to shift, because that is the current god of our powers that be. You know, that's what we worship, money and the economy. And so it's shifting and things are going to have to shift with it. We cannot, there is no way to bring back that which was.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of it, I think, will be impactful on, let's say, because another really big thing at the forefront right now is the discussion of climate disaster. You know, to my understanding, for example, what's going on in Texas right now is kind of a climate anomaly. It's not normal for them, and they are climate victims, climate change victims, at this point?
Well, I mean, the entire country looks like, you know, some kind of like 7-Eleven burrito or something, where the entire midsection of the country is having sub-zero temperatures.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely an anomaly, except it's not an anomaly because it's going to keep happening. What they're seeing is that the patterns, because it comes from the jet.
Right. The jet stream.
Jet stream. Thank you.
Yeah.
And it's going to keep moving south like this. And so this is possibly the new norm. And what do we want to do about that? You know?
Well, I guess to piggyback on what you were saying about the economy and jobs and whatnot, like the way that that may be impactful on the actual earth and environment may end up being at least something in a positive direction, because we have not managed really of our own accord to kind of, well, North American, specifically USA, has not really managed of our own accord to like be as strict with like zero waste stuff and, you know, environmental stuff as some other countries.
Sure.
How?
Well, and you know, 2020 really messed a lot of that up because people couldn't wrap their hands around how to not share germs without going disposable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we actually increased the problem in the last year.
Well, but there was, to my understanding, a little less air pollution.
Oh, absolutely.
And I was talking to my bestie last night and talking with her, and she mentioned in passing, you know, something about her job going back to in person because she's been working from home, and you know, she thinks it'll probably happen at some point this year. And she was working in a building downtown in downtown Los Angeles. Just as a tangent on this, I brought up, oh, I wonder if there's going to be like a really intense rebound in air pollution if people are rushing to try to travel again when they feel a little safer with the COVID situation. And people are still traveling now, obviously.
Right.
Like travel was not, you know, entirely super locked down, which was
sure, but I mean, you know, like
problem
like the report I cited, you know, 20% of travel business is not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are traveling a lot less, and I don't think people are going to be comfortable getting some people aren't going to be getting comfortable on getting on a plane ever again.
That's possible, but like you said in your blog predictions at the beginning of the year, it could also be like a night, like a roaring 20s thing where people are like, oh my God, I've been locked up for a year and a half or whatever the fuck.
And then they get stupid. And then all of a sudden in October, we get that true second wave of the virus.
Yeah.
And we're all fucked. And Natara goes on a rampage because she's sick of being stuck at home. Yeah, it's, you know, so some places are going to be, you know, like bringing workers back into the building, as it were. And then there are entire industries who are like, nah, our people are going to work from home in perpetuity.
Right. For sure. And I mean, it saves rent on like expensive.
Absolutely. Especially places that have like places downtown or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's that .com whose building got took over by bees. I don't know if you saw that. That was brilliant.
No.
There's a .com, some startup .com-y kind of thing, probably in the Silicon Valley, but I don't remember off the top of my head. Their office building, while they were all at home during the pandemic, got taken over by something like 20,000 bees.
That's super awesome.
I know.
That makes me happy. I love bees. So that's
And we need to foster the bees and you know, keep the bees going and nurture them. And so, you know, if they could turn an entire office building into a beehive, I mean, that is the best sort of dystopian future I can think of.
Yeah.
Nature thrives.
Yeah.
And of course, from a shamanic point of view, I love bees because they're so, everything about them is interconnected.
I mean, I appreciate it more than just cockroaches and Twinkies surviving. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Bees take over the downtown.
So I think that, you know, in the long run, like one of the first few things that was being commented on during like very strict lockdowns last year was some environmental changes that people felt they were noticing, like animals were interacting with them a little differently and a little more fearlessly. You know, air pollution had really gone down in some areas. So, you know, I mean, it'll be hard to say what exactly the net effect will be, but we couldn't environmentally regulate our way into better habits fast enough, it seems like.
Sure, sure.
So this kind of forced our hand.
Right. Well, and I feel like, you know, the pandemic forced our hand on a lot of things. It kickstarted a paradigm shift. And we just have to have the fortitude and the stubbornness, if you will, to keep going, regardless of what the capitalist system wants us to do. But, you know, so how do we harness the power of the tree to help that along? You know, being able to break down the information and put it back together in ways that make sense to people, you know, really is to me like the lower force effort, where we can look at the information and the science, and we can look at the heart feel and the creativity, you know, bring that down through the archetypes and the passion into actual physical creation, manifestation, doing, you know.
Right.
You know, that's the triad of action plus the kingdom. So
I've definitely had some interesting personal experiences around that. Like, I think part of it is like the whole humans need to hear a particular message. Like, I don't know what the fuck they say, like 47
something ridiculous. Like, I'm just going to say a bazillion. And
yeah. But it's like just kind of, I don't know if anybody is a person who has, for example, like talked to people in their life about a subject that they're passionate about for years on end, like close to several decades, or been involved in some kind of like cause or something for a long period of time. And you start to observe the ways that like people's reactions and responses to that thing you're involved in shift, like just the observance of like people's behavior in their relationship to the information, that almost makes me think of the energy kind of funneling down the tree.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's just so interesting because it's like, I remember years and years and years ago, like trying to explain certain, I don't know, let's say like maybe social equity concepts or something to folks in my life, but we literally didn't have vocabulary that existed back then that wasn't like from academia. Right. So because they heard like the academia, wah, 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 they immediately tuned it out because they're like, this is for elite people.
Right.
This has nothing to do with me.
Right.
And so I think like that's one example of how the energy kind of eventually gets funneled down.
Sure. And so, you know, maybe we are taking that energy of the 60s and finally, you know, compacting it into something that's more tangible for people. Because yeah, anytime anything sounds academic, it's airy, it's up here, it's not a doing thing, it's just a thinking thing. And
apparently
most people don't want to sit around just thinking.
Yeah.
But I mean, the question always comes down to like, well, so what do I do with that?
Right. And I mean, it's complicated because, I mean, there have been some great, you know, thinkers who have been really activist as well and very justice oriented and out in the world.
Sure.
But there have also, and there have been a lot of people also who have had really good ideas, but even as like potentially like marginalized individuals, they were still up in like this wrapping paper of academia, the ivory tower thing. And that was still a level of inaccessibility of the information.
Sure, sure. So yeah, I mean, I think that all of this ray of energy, if you will, because it's a vibe, you know, it's a concept as well as just ideas. But I think when you take ideas and bring them into a concept and then solidify them further, you know, as you said, funneling them down through the tree, we start to be able to actually do things with them, with the rest of ourselves, not just the mental body.
And I think a lot of it has to do as well with like our access to information technology at this point in time. Ding, sure. Ding, ding, hoed. because, you know, for example, when we're going back to the idea of like certain ideas getting distilled down, like I look at a lot of the, I follow a number of kind of like justice, equity oriented social media accounts. And some of the most effective ways that they get their points across now are just like these square slides on Instagram.
Sure.
So they actually have typed up slides that really kind of distill the information down to something that's very digestible. It's very relatable. It's very much in everyday terms. And it's very impactful as far as like how it gets across, like how is it affecting this group of people kind of thing.
Mm.
So I think within that, like our access to just sheer technology and the way in which technology not only has the potential for like mass distribution of an idea, but actually like just simplifying and distilling the idea down.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. Well, and I mean, you know, we've taken this concept of communication and information sharing. We've taken it up into Yesod, you know. All of a sudden, everybody is living on the internet. Everybody is living on Zoom. Everybody is living on social media. And what that does, and I've been arguing this for years, is that it removes time, it removes space, and it removes social constructs we do not care to bring with us.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a really cool podcast out there. It is called Altars Up Witches.
Love
it. And they are two queer identified folks who also identify as witches. I believe they are, at least one of them is, I don't remember if both of them are, but both of them are also ethnically Romani as well. And I was listening to their most recent episode, and one of them, Kiki, was talking about like shielding practices that you can use on the internet and a little more specifically involving social media.
Sure.
And one of, I'm sorry, because I can't remember her or their pronouns off the top of my head specifically, my apologies, but one of the things that they suggested was that like when using social media, the usage of a filter, like a filter that an app offers, is like a shield of protection.
Sure.
And I was like, whoa, mind blown. So even just kind of looking at like hyper practical tools like sure. that, well, and, you know, or some people might word it as like glamour magic, quote unquote.
All right, that works too. But I mean, you know, if you go back to the origins of folk magic, pretty much everywhere, is what can I do with objects I'm already using to do magic? I mean, a lot of it's sympathetic magic and stuff like that, but you know, how does this thing that I use every day, what magical properties does it have? What energetic properties does it have? How do I transmute this into something that helps me on the spiritual and magical level, as well as cleaning my house?
Right. And as somebody who really strongly struggles with like coming from an empowered place with a lot of social media, like I just feel like for myself personally, it's so easy to just get kind of like strangled by all the crap swirling around.
Sure.
Like when people say stuff like that, it seriously makes my head explode. It's just so practical, but it's like, whoa, I would have never looked at anything that way, you know? Because if you're in that mindset where it's like, they're trying to manipulate us with this, which we talked about a little bit on the last episode, and yes, they are, but like, you have to like be in an empowered negotiation with whatever you're going to use as well, you know?
Right. Well, and you know, practical magic is the best magic, honestly. But I mean, like, you know, I've been talking for a couple of years, probably 4 or 5 years at this point, about how we can do magic more effectively, or in spirituality in general, more effectively on the internet. To the point where when we were coming up on the election this last November, you know, we had a group going on called Transition Magic, where we were honestly, and after the election as well, just to like smooth things out. But we were talking about how do we take the energy that we want to use and amplify it on the internet so that we can affect change. You know, and even possibly counter some of the woo that people are doing on the ground, if it's not the woo we want to support. And yeah, I mean, to me, as I just, you know, as I said, the internet is a manifestation of the fourth dimension. It's a manifestation of the astral. We don't have to bring all of that social baggage with us. And we can do things like filters, and we can do things like, you know, the Snapchat, like, you know, ears or you know, kitty ears or whatever to, you know, present ourselves differently, you know, perhaps closer to how we wish to be perceived on the internet in a way that we may not be able to do in the physical.
Yeah. And I really appreciate the kind of updated perspectives on this because, again, as I said before, I tend to be one of those folks who feels a little more used by the internet than I am using it.
Sure.
A lot of the time. So, you know, I really appreciate that. And I also kind of in the earlier days of social media, I had a lot of real weird experiences where I felt like people were like doing a lot of voyeurism on, well, this is probably my own personal baggage because I still am unpacking personal baggage with like evil eye type stuff. But one of the recurring things that I would have experiences with back in the day would be like weird voyeurism, like having a person in my life who I didn't see in person
back when we could do that in the before times,
you know, but who, you know, who I didn't see a whole bunch, I would run into them in person and they'd be like, oh, so I saw da 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 on your social media, da 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 da, like, are you okay? Are you this? Are you that? Like, that's really fucked up. But like, then that would be like the only thing they would talk to me about. So that kind of started turning me off.
Well, and I mean, absolutely, there was an aspect to social media, especially in the beginning, that had a voyeuristic aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one of the things that I recommend to people if they're going to go hang out on the internet is to, you know, you're essentially hanging out on the astral. So what do you do before you go hang out in those spaces? Where do you go? You know, what do you do? What's your preparation before you do ritual? You know, before you cast circle. So you set up your protection, you clear when you come back, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And if you want to travel the internet safely, because hi trolls, and just weirdness and the lack of social construct works both ways, right? That the social contract often gets dropped as well. So you want to carry your protection for your energy and your well-being. And so, you know, literally do ritual before you go in, do ritual when you come out, because you've been traveling in other lands on the astral.
I'm giving thumbs up in a very like A for effort, Irina, at myself, because I just, sometimes I just can't.
Sure.
Sometimes I just can't.
Well, and if you can't, it's perfectly okay to step away from it. Like if you're low energy, don't go doing magic on the astral either, you know?
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah.
You have to gauge your level of spoons.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. On that note.
Did we have any live studio audience come knocking at the door? We had
absolutely no live studio audience knocking at the door. I am going to open this opportunity up for people again next month. If people want to come and hang out with us and ask us questions, type away at us in the chat and distract the fuck out of us, you know, or come and actually discuss like Kabbalah, or come with your questions about Kabbalah and like, how do I apply this? Or what is the, you know, how do I filter this through the tree or whatever, you know? I mean, yeah, we could sit around just talking to each other and record it and, you know, hope that somebody listens to it, or we could actually be helpful. I don't know. It'd be cool if we could do both, right? As I make the Muppet face. But yes, if you want to come and be part of our studio audience, we would love to have you. We tend to record on the third Wednesday of the month at 8 p.m. Pacific.
I had somebody who told me they were interested for tonight. I don't know exactly what happened to her, but that's fine. Things happen. People get screen fatigue. Yeah, people get screen fatigue.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, I think also in this a little bit kind of liminal where it's like, are we opening? Am I going to give somebody a disease? Do I have to be on Zoom for 8 more months? People are just like, whatevs about it. Well, and you said too, like, and I was thinking of this too, like our Los Angeles anniversary of lockdown is going to be coming up next month as well.
So. Well, and you know, anytime somebody's coming up on an anniversary date of trauma, and it's usually like 2 to 4 weeks out, they start getting squirrely. And guess what? We are in that space of 3 weeks out of the anniversary.
What I've been noticing from people has just been like, I'm dead inside.
Sure.
It's this very Twilight Zone kind of thing.
I went through several hours last night where I was like, I'm just gonna sit here in that dead inside space and see how that is. I mean, I get it. It's this is a hard time to be transitioning through.
We have to remember that just like when it comes to the general ass public, the unwashed masses as my
Well, the people who don't have access to all of the tools, all of the energetic tools.
It's like, if the shut off button is your best way of coping, then thumbs up.
I am all for people having access to the shut off button, because shit is real right now, and it is big and it is extra and it is stressful. So, you know, paradigm shift is not comfortable. Otherwise we'd be doing it all the time.
Yeah.
So, all right. With that, we bid you adieu, although it really seems like a terrible thing to be saying. We bid you a wonderful month.
Yes. Have a great month.
And we hope to have some of you in the studio audience next month.
Yes, we'd love to see you.
I have been and will continue to be Ayama Natara.
And I am Irina Zara.
Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
All music on this podcast is from Carpe Diem by The Science and Queen Jet Matus.